It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here on a Friday. Hour number three, Nick Braden, Dimace, and Marquise. Stick to Sports is coming up at 8:45 this morning. Right now, we try to make some money for you and some winners across the world of college football and the NFL. Our buddy Lee Sterling from ParamountSports.com joins us again this week. Lee, how are we feeling this morning? How are you?
I'm feeling good. Kind of a weird college board with so many teams off this week, but I guess it's Georgia and Florida and everyone else.
Before we get to the games that we're going to highlight, let me ask you that, because you did say it's a weird board, and I'm not a fan of the double bye in college football, because we get weeks like this where you lose some of the drama, just from a viewing standpoint, but from a sports betting standpoint, is this a week where, like, the novice entry-level bettor that, you know, probably should sign up for your picks needs to be careful and not go overboard or be more selective because there's less games? Like, how do you view weeks like this from a gambling perspective?
Well, it just depends on where the lines are set. So, actually, I like the card a lot this week, and last couple weeks have been, you know, a little tougher. They've had some really tight lines, and I've had a lot of games. You know, we've won last week, but had a lot of games go right down to the wire. So I'd rather have games that, you know, we're sitting back at halftime and we're laying a touchdown and we're up 35-7. The biggest problem in the NFL is, for instance, I had three games going last Sunday, and one of my three games is Seattle. They're up 24-0, and a friend of mine sitting with me, I'm in Kansas City, we're sitting in a sports bar, and he goes, well, you at least got one, you put one to bet. I said, no, that'll probably be the game that I lost. I lose that game by half a point. They're laying 7.5, and I win the other two. So nothing's easy, but I actually think there's some lines that they really set wrong for this week.
Well, let's get to the biggest game in all of college football this weekend, and that is Georgia-Florida, both coming off a bye, both getting healthy. Rivalry game where you don't really know what to think. Personally, I think Florida's playing better football than Georgia right now, so I would just lean in a rivalry game to take the points here with Florida. Am I totally out in left field?
No, you're not. And this is one of the games. This is actually one of the games I'm giving my clients. Rarely do I play these high-profile games, but so I'm sitting there on Sunday afternoon, and I'm projecting the lines for the next week before they come out. I made this line 3. I thought they'd maybe make it 3.5 because of the public thinking that Georgia the last 2 years, the success they've had, and they've actually embarrassed Florida the last two games in this series. But when I look at this game, Florida scored 24 more points on every defense this season. So when I evaluate the game, the question to me is, can Georgia score 30 or more points? Well, based on the last 2 weeks versus Kentucky, 21 points, no. South Carolina, 17 points, no. And then I throw out all these other games except for Notre Dame, where they scored 23 points. I think the answer is probably not. So I look at explosive plays, and Georgia just doesn't have it this year. They don't have tight ends or wide receivers that can make plays. Florida does. Kyle Trask is the right option for them at quarterback. He keeps getting better every week. He's got a tight end in Pitts and wide receivers and Swain and Jefferson. These three have combined for 84 receptions and 10 touchdowns. They make big plays, and even their top two pass rushers who missed the South Carolina game will be back for this game. Plus, they have 12 interceptions. They have a lot of great defensive backs that'll be playing at the next level. I think they'll jump some routes here. Something's wrong with this Georgia team. They're nowhere close to last year. Wrong team's favored. Florida, 27-20.
Now, the UT-UAB game, do you think that line is a little bit too low, minus 11?
Well, here's why it's this low. Mm-hmm. Derek, you look at Tennessee. How about this fact? They have failed to cover the last 9 games versus FBS-level non-SEC opponents that made the trip to Knoxville. So if you remember the Charlotte game last year, they looked lethargic. I don't think they're going to look that bad, but Here's the problem. You're playing a well-coached UAB team. They're from a lower level, but they have the number 5 rated defense. They have not allowed any opponent to score more than 20 points. So let's give them 27 or 30. That means they got to hold UAB for sure to probably 17 or less points to cover this game. The $64,000 question in this game is, can the UAB front seven hold up versus the run, or are they going to have their safeties cheat up, and that would leave their cornerbacks vulnerable versus two real good senior wide receivers who just torched South Carolina? I think they're going to hang in there. I think they might give up some chunk plays, but I like a well-coached team here over a team that, you know, playing much better but still looking for their identity. Tennessee wins 27-20, but UAB covers.
Lee Sterling is with us here on Morning Drive. Let's get to the Tennessee in the NFL ranks. The Titans on the road this week, 3-point underdogs against the Carolina team coming off of a very bad performance in San Francisco. What do you make of this game, and what do you see with the line?
Well, what I've noticed is when Carolina wins and covers, they get Christian McCaffrey involved from the first series. They did not last week. They fell behind quickly. When you're down at least 2 touchdowns in the NFL, very tough to come back and win games. So I think Tennessee's got a shot to keep them in check here. Their defense allowing just 16 points per game. They have 22 sacks. I think people are figuring out Kyle Allen now, Ryan Tannehill playing at a high level. I'm not trying to force passes. He's 2-0 as a starter, completing 44 of 62 passes. They might even start getting him running the ball. He can be effective if he has to on third down to get first downs. And Titans, I think they're going to unleash Derrick Henry here in this game. Got a run defense for Carolina, allowing 4.7 yards per carry. And this is where Tennessee does their best work. They're 8-5 as an underdog since 2018. I'm going to call for the upset here. Tennessee knocks off Carolina 23-20.
How about Houston and Jacksonville, another one in the AFC South that's huge, although this one taking place across the pond. What do you make of Houston and the Jags?
Well, the Jags are looking for revenge. Lost 13-12 in Week 2 at Houston. Rookie, that's where Gardner Minshew, his first career start. Doug Marrone went for the win on that 2-point conversion with 36 seconds left. Didn't get it. You could go 2 different ways here with Gardner Minshew and the 4-4 Jags getting their second licks at the 5-3 Texans here. I think Minshew could move forward here, and I think he's going to have some success against a Romeo Crennel defense here, having seen him once here. J.J. Watt out for the game and out for the season. I think that's a huge loss. And Will Fuller, not 100%. So I think they're going to be able to contain DeAndre Hopkins here. Give me the Jacksonville Jaguars here, 24-20.
Lee, how can people get the Game of the Week and tell us about the website as well as the phone number, if you could?
Well, Game of the Week this week, South Carolina and Vanderbilt. Two teams, Vanderbilt off that big win, looking to keep it rolling. South Carolina off 2 heart-wrenching losses, so looking to get that mojo back. You want to get it for free, just call 800-400-9741. A lot of people call this month November, or Paramount Sports, we call it November. We've had 13 out of 14 winning years this month, so it's 5 weeks from now through Monday, December 2nd. And remember, this month we got MAC action every Tuesday and Wednesday night, so 31 straight days of action. You want to hop on board, use coupon code SAVE200, just $397 for the entire month of November. It's all available, ParamountSports.com.
Lee Sterling, great stuff as always. We'll chat again next Friday. Good luck this weekend.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You got it. How about that? The return of MAC football on a Tuesday night. Oh, I can't wait.
And apparently, yes. Apparently Lee listens to the show trying to get in on the dad jokes as well. After
I got more dad jokes.
No, we're good.
I'm giving 2 more dad jokes.
Matter of fact, let's just get a dad joke a segment.
Before the show ends today, I'm giving 2 more dad jokes.
How about this? When you get done giving out your ridiculous over-unders at 9:30 for games people can't find on a map, much less a television, you can give out the dad jokes as well there.
Okay, cool.
Good?
Yeah.
We'll just hand it off to you for the entire segment.
Yeah, cool.
You entertain us
y'all
with Valdosta State under 52, and then dad jokes in a bar.
I got 2 dad jokes.
Yes.
Oh. I love it.
No, guys, seriously, he wrote them down in a notebook.
He did.
In a notebook, he wrote
them
down.
It was like Eminem on 8 Mile, like on the bus riding around.
Right,
like,
right.
The notebook looks like it's from 1994.
It is.
What was that, like when you had like a sophomore class at Michigan State? Was that your like intro to biology notebook?
Say D. Mace hearts Tony Braxton in that book.
I'm just sitting writing Tony's name all day. Tony Braxton.
It says Derek Tony Braxton. Derek Braxton. I'll take your name. Derek Braxton.
All right. So a heartbreaker last night for the Nashville Predators. A big contract. But one thing also that I heard yesterday with Elliot Friedman when he was on with Darren Donick and Chase regarding Roman Josi and the contract. We're going to get to that on the other side. We're back after this on Morning Drive. Terry Crisp coming up at 8:30 this morning. We'll talk all things Preds with Crispy.
I can tell a joke. Can you?
Yeah. God. From time to time.
So Willie Donick doing his best Derek Mason interpretation.
Yeah.
Impression.
It's a dad joke Friday.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's a good question. I think we all fell on our head once as a kid. Never recovered.
Yeah, no, Derek might be right about that. Derek did it for a career.
Yeah. Derek did it for a living. Flames beat the Predators last night 6-5 on what was basically a buzzer beater. Preds were leading 4-1 and gave up a big time letdown to the Calgary Flames, who were in desperate need of a victory. Also last night, Austin Watson, while the game was going on. And how about this? I mean, Watson gets a 3-year, $4.5 million contract extension. And oh, by the way, says, I'm just going to go out there. And obviously, he knew he had the contract in the bag while the game was going on, I would assume. And he has 4 points last night, 2 goals and 2 assists. But one thing I thought was interesting yesterday, I was driving on my way to do the TV hit with Kayla for Channel 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to Elliot Friedman on with Darren Donick and Chase for his weekly appearance. Take a listen to this audio because he makes it sound like Poile and the Predators had to budge, and you'll hear the audio in just 1 second, almost like Roman Josi came away the big winner from the negotiation. Take a listen to this.
Their window to win the Stanley Cup is very much alive in the next few years, and if you lose Roman Josi, you're not replacing him. And I think at the end of the day, the Predators knew they had to budge a little bit, and they'll be glad they did. This contract, I know that everybody worries about what he's going to look like when he's 36 or 37 years old. If you guys win the Cup, and he's a big part of it, and he would be if you guys win it, nobody's going to care what he looks like when he's 36 or 37 years old.
So when I'm listening to that live, it felt like to me that he made it seem like Roman Josi really got the better end of the deal. And like, I just want to move past 8 years. We all know on the back end contract, that's just the price of doing business in this day and age. And you look at the non-movement clause, and I know Poile doesn't give him out. I mean, let's face it, Pekka has one, and you know he doesn't give him out like Halloween candy. But did Poile and the Preds really budge? I mean, I still think $9.05 million is like a major win for the Predators. This guy could have got 10, and I never felt like he was ever going to get on the market. The guy was a Pred for life. So giving him a non-movement clause doesn't make me feel like Poile budged. Am I wrong in thinking that?
I mean, I can see why you feel that way.
I just don't think there's a Predator fan that ever believed Roman Josi would play for another hockey team.
Well, it's not their money.
Exactly. I mean, if he hits open market, all bets are off. You know, you don't know because somebody might offer him $11 million and you are only willing to give him $9 million. And maybe they offer him $11 million and say, you know what? There's a no move clause for you too. You can stay here as long as you want to. Who's not going to take that deal? I think Josi did win from this standpoint. And Friedman's right. If you win a championship, nobody cares what you look like in the last 2 or 3 years of your contract. Who cares? You won a championship, and that's what you were here for. That's why they re-signed you. But I think because we know how Poile operates. And like you say, he don't give these things out like candy. He just don't say he's not Oprah. Everybody gets, you know, no move clause. You get it. You get it. You get it. No, he doesn't. That's not how he operates. And instead of him giving you money, he says, you know what? I'm going to do something that I've never done before. We're going to sign you. We're going to give you 9 plus for the next X amount of years, and
biggest contract in franchise history.
And we cannot move you. No matter what happens, we cannot move you. If you end up being a horrible player, we cannot move you. We can't do anything.
Right.
So Yosi did win.
Right. If he wants to make $9.059 million at age 35, 36, and 37 mm-hmm. in 2026, 2027, and 2028, if he wants to make $9-plus million a year as a Nashville Predator, it's his decision.
Exactly.
And that is giving up a lot if you're the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, so even to me, he's won.
They moved P.K. Subban.
Yeah.
And they didn't get a lot in return, but they were able to move the contract.
Exactly.
But Roman Yossi being the captain, I'm trying to think in sports, a guy in his – obviously, when the contract goes to year three and year five, he'll be in his early to mid-30s. He'll end in his late 30s. When's the last time we've seen a team trade a team captain in the prime of his career? So
this team? I mean, they traded Shea Weber for P.K. Subban. Mm-hmm. Team captain in the prime of his career.
Yeah,
in part because the gravity of the contract.
Yeah, the back end of his contract.
The back end of the contract was so bad that they knew that, in theory, if they had a chance to get out from underneath it, that you had to move the most beloved player, arguably in franchise history, who was the team captain, who was, you know, he hadn't been playing like maybe his best hockey, but he was mm-hmm. still relatively young. And you got P.K. Subban back in return. P.K. Subban gave you 3 years at $9 million a year, which is a ton of money,
mm-hmm.
which was at the time the largest amount of money they'd ever given a player on an AAV basis. Not mm-hmm. They didn't give the contract out, I get that, but they were paying the responsibility. Yeah. But again, part of the reason he took that deal and the reason he got P.K. Subban, a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. P.K. Subban's a great brand builder. He's a great defenseman. He was, you know, great, all these things. But he knew he could get rid of him. Mm-hmm. He knew he could take on that salary because he could say, you know what, I'll trade you for two prospects and a second-round draft pick to the Devils, not really feel like I got a whole lot in return, but you know what mm-hmm. I did? Got myself $9 million in cap space.
Exactly.
Roman Yossi does not have to give him that now.
No.
Roman Yossi, at age 35, 36, and 37, can say to you, nope, Nashville, you've got to pay me $9.059 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be playing on the third defense pairing because I can't skate anymore.
So give me,
unlikely, but like,
give me the specifics of the Weber because I wasn't here when that happened. So who gave the contract, and then obviously we know
so
who dealt
it. I don't want to go into so deep because it was a really complicated. I don't remember all of the details.
Okay.
There was an offer from I believe either New Jersey or Philadelphia. I think it was okay. Philadelphia that made a huge offer, and you know and then. The Preds had to come back and counter, and they gave him a monstrous deal that had huge dollar figures on the back end.
And what year are we talking roughly?
Gosh, I should know this, but I want to say 2012, 2013.
Okay.
We can look all this information up. Point is, they gave him a huge mm-hmm. contract. He was going to go to free agency, and he didn't because he stayed here, and they went through this whole lengthy process where, you know, there was another offer from another team. They had to match that offer to keep him here. They got the deal done. It was the biggest contract ever. He was making seven and some change. It was the largest contract they'd ever given out at the time before Johansson's deal mm-hmm. and stuff. And so but it was going to be an albatross around their neck because I remember reading, and I had not worked at this station. I wasn't covering the Preds. I was a sort of just a fan and a season ticket holder at the time. When they traded for P.K. Subban, your first thought was, holy smokes, they just gave up their team captain. I can't mm-hmm. believe that Shea Weber is leaving. And then as the sports media part of my brain kicked in and I started looking at the contract, looking at the ages,
mm-hmm.
looking at the years of the deals, where are these players going to be in 4 years, 5 years, 8 years? And you could see how obvious it was why David Poile made the move to get P.K. Subban. He was getting a younger, mm-hmm. better version of Shea Weber at the same price, essentially. I'm shifting all the cost from 31, 32, 33-year-old to a 27, 28, 29-year-old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm shifting everything back 3 or 4 years.
I'm getting younger with the same amount of money.
And the same quality player, mm-hmm. essentially. So that was the whole point. But again, that is the risk you run. But do Blackhawks fans sit around right now?
No, they don't care.
No,
championships, yeah.
They got multiple.
Their team is in cap purgatory for three to four or 8 years. Like, does it matter when you count all three of your banners or not? And I agree with
Friedman. That's why he was right.
Yeah, I agree with the basic point, which is if Roman Yossi is your guy, give him the extra $500,000 a year and give him the no movement clause. And if you win a cup, no, none of this matters.
Nobody's talking about it.
I was just thinking, you know, with the way he plays on the ice, the way he's revered off the ice, you know, Poile talks about how great of a person he is, how much he loves Nashville, him and his wife got married. Like, if you were to tell me He was going to get the 8-year, 9-and-change contract, mm-hmm. and there was no movement clause. If that wasn't included, like, I couldn't envision, and I know there's a precedent here with Shea Weber, I just couldn't see them moving him.
No, I think they're still moving. I think that if there's no...
David Poyle has shown it, he'll trade everybody.
If there's not a no-trade clause or no-move clause in that contract, best believe...
Even if he's playing well?
If he's playing well, okay, that might be something different. But if his production has dropped off, and I'm not saying it's fell off the cliff, but if it drops off, you would only be smart as a GM to say, you know what, he's getting older, the production is not there like it was, you know, 2 or 3 seasons ago. Can we get something for him? Can we get younger and maybe a little bit better at the same cost? Can we do that? Well, yeah. So let's move him.
2012, so I was right about the year. Okay. Shea Weber was 27 years old, 14-year, $110 million contract. That means the Montreal Canadiens are on the hook for cap hit of $7.8 million at age 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, and 41 for Shea Weber.
14 years? I don't think I've ever heard that uttered. Somebody got a 14-year contract.
Well, I'm
signing
pretty sure.
Of $68 million.
I'm pretty sure when they did that deal, they knew those. They were going to trade him before he completely bottomed out.
Bingo. Because there's no way you can be on the hook for 5 years at $8 million, basically, for a player between the ages of 37 and 41.
Exactly.
Like, you can't be on the hook for that. So David Poyle knew, hey, we can get P.K. Subban, who's a younger, better version, essentially, maybe a little extra money, extra $1 million a year, largely the same player, same cost, but I'm not on the hook for you know,
and it worked
eight
out.
More,
I mean, and it worked out for him. You know, they went to a Stanley Cup, they won a President's Trophy,
right? Exactly.
I mean, they were in those 3 years. Not to say that it was all PK, but he was a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, you know what, we didn't get the cup, but we feel we got our money's worth.
Terry Crisp, he always gets his money's worth. He's coming up next on Morning Drive. Terry Crisp coming up at 8:30 this morning. We'll talk all things Preds with Crispy.
I can tell a joke. Can you?
Yeah. God. Time to time.
So Willie Donick doing his best Derek Mason interpretation. Yeah. Impression.
It's a dad joke Friday.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's a good question. I think we all fell on our head once as a kid. Never recovered.
Yeah, no, Derek might be right about that. Derek did it for a career.
Yeah. Derek did it for a living. Flames beat the Predators last night 6-5 on what was basically a buzzer beater. Preds were leading 4-1 and gave up a big time letdown to the Calgary Flames, who were in desperate need of a victory. Also last night, Austin Watson, while the game was going on. And how about this? I mean, Watson gets a 3-year, $4.5 million contract extension. And oh, by the way, says, I'm just going to go out there. And obviously, he knew he had the contract in the bag while the game was going on, I would assume. And he has 4 points last night, 2 goals and 2 assists. But one thing I thought was interesting yesterday, I was driving on my way to do the TV hit with Kayla for Channel 2. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to Elliot Friedman on with Darren Donick and Chase for his weekly appearance. Take a listen to this audio because he makes it sound like Poyle and the Predators had to budge, and you'll hear the audio in just 1 second, almost like Roman Josi came away the big winner from the negotiation. Take a listen to this.
Their window to win the Stanley Cup is very much alive the next few years, and if you lose Roman Josi, you're not replacing him. And I think at the end of the day, the Predators knew they had to budge a little bit, and they'll be glad they did. This contract, I know that everybody worries about what he's going to look like when he's 36 or 37 years old. If you guys win the Cup, and he's a big part of it, and he would be if you guys win it, nobody's going to care what he looks like when he's 36 or 37 years old.
So when I'm listening to that live, it felt like to me that he made it seem like Roman Josi really got the better end of the deal. And like, I just want to move past 8 years. We all know on the back end contract, because that's just the price of doing business in this day and age. And you look at the non-movement clause, and I know Poyle doesn't give him out. I mean, let's face it, Pekka has one, and you know, he doesn't give him out like Halloween candy. But did Poyle and the Preds really budge? I mean, I still think $9.05 million is like a major win for the Predators. This guy could have got 10, and I never felt like he was ever going to get on the market. The guy was a Pred for life. So giving him a non-movement clause doesn't make me feel like Poyle budged. Am I wrong in thinking that?
I mean, I can see why you feel that way.
I just don't think there's a Predator fan that ever believed Roman Josi would play for another hockey team.
Well, it's not their money.
Exactly. I mean, if he hits open market, all bets are off. You know, you don't know because somebody might offer him $11 million. And you are only willing to give him $9 million. And maybe they offer him $11 million and say, you know what? There's a no-move clause for you, too. You can stay here as long as you want to. Who's not going to take that deal? I think Josi did win from this standpoint. And Freeman's right. If you win a championship, nobody cares what you look like in the last 2 or 3 years of your contract. Who cares? You won a championship, and that's what you were here for. That's why they re-signed you. But I think because we know how Poile operates. And like you say, he don't give these things out like candy. He just don't say he's not Oprah. Everybody gets, you know, no move clause. You get it. You get it. You get it. No, he doesn't. That's not how he operates. And instead of him giving you money, he says, you know what? I'm going to do something that I've never done before. We're going to sign you. We're going to give you 9+ for the next X amount of years.
Biggest contract in franchise history.
And we cannot move you. No matter what happens, we cannot move you. If you end up being a horrible player, we cannot move you. We can't do anything.
Right.
So Josi did win.
Right. If he wants to make $9.059 million at age 35, 36, and 37 mm-hmm. in 2026, 2027, and 2028, if he wants to make $9+ million a year as a Nashville Predator, it's his decision.
Exactly.
And that is giving up a lot if you're the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, so to me, he's won.
They moved P.K. Subban.
Yeah.
And they didn't get a lot in return, but they were able to move the contract.
Exactly.
But Roman Josi being the captain, I'm trying to think in sports, a guy in his early, obviously when the contract goes to year 3 and year 5, he'll be in his early to mid-30s. He'll end in his late 30s. When's the last time we've seen a team trade a team captain in the prime of his career? So
this team? I mean, they traded Shea Weber for P.K. Subban, team captain in the prime of his career.
Yeah,
in part because the gravity of the contract.
Yeah, the back end of his contract.
The back end of the contract was so bad that they knew that, in theory, if they had a chance to get out from underneath it, that you had to move the most beloved player, arguably in franchise history, who was the team captain, who was, you know, he hadn't been playing like maybe his best hockey, but he was mm-hmm. still relatively young. And you got P.K. Subban back in return. P.K. Subban gave you 3 years at $9 million a year, which is a ton of money,
mm-hmm.
which was at the time the largest amount of money they'd ever given a player on an AAV basis. Not mm-hmm. They didn't give the contract out, I get that, but they were paying the responsibility.
Yeah.
But again, part of the reason he took that deal and the reason he got P.K. Subban, a lot of reasons. P.K. Mm-hmm. Subban's a great brand builder. He's a great defenseman. He was, you know, great, all these things. But he knew he could get rid of him. He knew he could take on that salary because he could say, you know what, I'll trade you for 2 prospects and a second-round draft pick to the Devils, not really feel like I got a whole lot in return, but you know what mm-hmm. I did? Got myself $9 million in cap space.
Exactly.
Roman Josi does not have to give him that now.
No.
Roman Josi, at age 35, 36, and 37, can say to you, nope, Nashville, you've got to pay me $9.059 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be playing on the third defense pairing because I can't skate anymore.
So give me,
unlikely, but like,
give me the specifics of the Weber because I wasn't here when that happened. So who gave the contract? And then obviously we know who dealt him.
I don't want to go into it so deep because it was a really complicated. I don't remember all of the details.
Okay.
There was an offer from, I believe, either New Jersey or Philadelphia. I think it was Philadelphia that made a huge offer. And, you know, and then the Preds had to come back and counter, and they gave him a monstrous deal that had huge dollar figures on the back end.
And what year are we talking roughly?
Gosh, I should know this, but I want to say 2012, 2013.
Okay.
We can look all this information up. Point is, they gave him a huge mm-hmm. contract. He was going to go to free agency, and he didn't because he stayed here, and they went through this whole lengthy process where, you know, there was another offer from another team. They had to match that offer to keep him here. They got the deal done. It was the biggest contract ever. He was making $7 million and some change. It was the largest contract they'd ever given out at the time before Johansson's deal mm-hmm. and stuff. And so but it was going to be an albatross around their neck because I remember reading, and I did not start. I had not worked at this station. I wasn't covering the Preds. I was a sort of just a fan and a season ticket holder at the time. When they traded for P.K. Subban, your first thought was, holy smokes, they just gave up their team captain. I can't mm-hmm. believe that Shea Weber is leaving. And then as like the sports media part of my brain kicked in, and I started looking at the contract, looking at the ages, mm-hmm. looking at the years of the deals, where are these players going to be in 4 years, 5 years, 8 years. And you could see how obvious it was why David Poile made the move to get PK Subban. He was getting a younger, mm-hmm. better version of Shea Weber at the same price, essentially. But shifting,
you could justify.
Right, I'm shifting all the cost from 31, 32, 33-year-old to a 27, 28, 29-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm shifting everything back 3 or 4 years.
I'm getting younger with the same amount of money.
And the same quality player, mm-hmm. essentially. So that was the whole point. But again, that is the risk you run. But do Blackhawks fans sit around right now?
No, they don't care. They
care that championships,
their team is,
yeah. They got multiple.
Their team is in cap purgatory for three to four or eight years. Like, does it matter when you count all three of your banners or not? And I agree with
Friedman. That's why he was right.
Yeah, I agree with the basic point, which is if Roman Josi is your guy, give him the extra $500,000 a year and give him the no movement clause. And if you win a cup, no, none of this matters.
Nobody's talking about it.
I was just thinking, you know, with the way he plays on the ice, the way he's revered off the ice, you know, Poile talks about how great of a person he is, how much he loves Nashville, him and his wife got married. Like, if you were to tell me he was going to get the eight year, nine and change contract mm-hmm. and there was no movement clause, if that wasn't included, like, I couldn't envision, and I know there's a precedent here with Shea Weber, I just couldn't see them moving him.
No, I think they're still moving. I think that if there's no...
David Poile has shown it to trade everybody.
If there's not a no-trade clause or no-move clause in that contract, best believe...
Even if he's playing well?
If he's playing well, okay, that might be something different, but if his production has dropped off, and I'm not saying it's fell off the cliff, but if it drops off... You would only be smart as a GM to say, you know what? He's getting older. The production is not there like it was, you know, two or three seasons ago. Can we get something for him? Can we get younger and maybe a little bit better at the same cost? Can we do that? Well, yeah. So let's move him.
2012, so I was right about the year. Shea Weber was 27 years old, 14-year, $110 million contract. That means the Montreal Canadiens are on the hook for cap hit of $7.8 million at age 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, and 41 for Shea Weber.
14 years? I don't think I've ever heard that uttered. Somebody got a 14-year contract.
Well, I'm
signing
pretty
bonus
sure
of $68 million.
I'm pretty sure when they did that deal, they knew those. They were going to trade him before he completely bottomed out.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. Because there's no way you can be on the hook for 5 years at $8 million, basically, for a player between the ages of 37 and 41.
Exactly.
Like, you can't be on the hook for that. So David Poile knew, hey, we can get PK Subban, who's a younger, better version, essentially, maybe a little extra money, extra $1 million a year,
mm-hmm.
Largely the same player, same cost, but I'm not on the hook for you know,
and it worked
eight
out.
More,
I mean, and it worked out for them. You know, they went to a Stanley Cup. They won a President's Trophy.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they were in those 3 years. Not to say that it was all PK, but he was a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, you know what, we didn't get the cup, but we feel we got our money's worth.
Terry Crisp, he always gets his money's worth. He's coming up next on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive. Good to have you in here on a Friday, 8:33. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise. Stick to Sports is coming up in about 15 minutes. Right now, we welcome in our pal Terry Crisp, Preds Television, Fox Sports Tennessee. Obviously, you see him with Lindsey Riley each and every broadcast, and he's brought to you by the Highland Group. Crispy, good morning. How's the coffee this morning, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. You must have the camera moving on me. It's tasting good, by the way. The first cup was a little sour because I was going over my notes from last night. Then I threw them away, got a second cup, and it's better, and I'm all set to talk civilized with you guys.
What do you do? Go back to put your coaching hat on and just, you know, when you see, you know, the players are pissed off. You know they're upset about how they performed in the third period. Like, do you need to say anything? Do you need to go hellfire and brimstone? Do you just need to sort of say, hey, guys, you know what you did wrong? Like, how do you approach a situation like last night where you know everybody in that room knows what they did wrong?
Exactly. You know what? You just put your thumb right on the whole thing. What is it? No, the coach knows it. The players know. There's no sense beating a dead horse, and there's no sense going through it. The guys, believe it or not, they feel as bad as anybody. They were the guys out there in front of 17,000, 18,000 fans, in front of the TV people, in front of everybody, and they know exactly what happened, how it went down. So there's nothing that a coach can go and explain or say to them or yell at them about that they don't already know and feel. So like what Coach Lav said in his post-game talk, he says, nope, he said, I don't talk to him. He said, we'll talk tomorrow. We'll go over it tomorrow. And you know what? That's the best theory for a coach. I found out that I didn't want to talk to players either after a game. It's your best move, especially sometimes you're heated. Players are heated. You say things you can't take back or things happen. And Lav has the right idea. You know what? Today, they'll sit down, they'll go over it, they'll correct it, and they'll be ready for the next hockey game.
Crispy, I think so many people have been caught up this year in Matt Duchene and how well he has played, how well Pekka-Rinne has played, and almost forgotten about is Nick Bonino, who had another goal last night, and he is having a fantastic year. Are we not giving him the credit he deserves? Because he's off to a great start.
You know what? Nick Bonino is always one of those players that everybody says, if you're going to win a cup or you want to take a run at a cup, he's the type of player you have to have. But he never gets the headline glory, the headline talks that other players get. But he plays fourth line, third line, second line. You'll put him up to the first line if we have injuries or if they need him to be. He kills penalties. The odd time you'll pop him on a power play. Late in the game, you need big face-offs won. You got Bonino and Sissons out there. This guy is by no means underrated by any of the coaches or anything. It's just that you're right. He doesn't get the accolades that big names get, but he certainly does the job.
Another guy that is on a tear right now is Janko. He has 4 goals in 5 games. I mean, goodness gracious. I know Arvi stole one of his goals. He must have been really upset because after Arvi stole the goal, he went on a tear here. Just, I mean, explain to us what he's meant to the team thus far.
Well, if that's all it takes, then somebody else to steal another goal from him because he's playing like a big guy. You sit in the dressing room. Funny you said that because in the dressing room afterwards, the guys all give it to you when that happens. They say, come on, you knew it was yours, and they go on. But Yarncroke, you know what? Coach Lav and the staff have said all along that Yarncroke is, I just went through what Bonino means to this team. Yarncroke is very similar. They can play him on left wing, right wing, center. He can kill penalties, do whatever. He pays the power play. You can play him on the third line or put him up to the first line, and you get a full effort from Yarncroke in that one. And it just seems that he's hitting a stride. And I think now what he feels is his confidence in himself. And the coaches have relayed that to him with the ice time. The effort that he's given, they're giving him ice time for it. And that's well-deserved.
Crispy, some big news obviously going down during the middle of the game. Austin Watson's 3-year, $4.5 million contract extension. You know, a lot of times you watch Austin Watson, if you watch this team night in and night out, you know what he does. He gets dirty, he'll muck, he'll grind, he'll get in front, he'll be a net front presence. But it might not necessarily always show up on the stat sheet. What do you see from him and just how valuable is he? Because this is one of the smaller teams. This is not a massive team size-wise. We don't play a heavy brand of hockey. He provides, I think, really an invaluable skill set.
He does. And as a coach, I wish we had 2 more Austin Watsons. I really do. Because in the game now, in the playoffs now, you have to have some big horses. You have to have some guys that can run the whole gamut for you every series. And Austin Watson is one of them. But he's also proven that, you know what, he's taken his licks. He stood up to them. He's come back stronger than ever. And his teammates love him for the effort. And he's probably appreciated as much as anybody in that dressing room. As you just said, when the going gets tough and they know they have to have somebody to have their back out there when a scrum or a fight or whatever breaks out, Austin Watson is the first guy right now. He sticks his nose in, he intercepts it, whatever it takes to do it. And these guys are invaluable, and you're right. They don't get the limelight. They don't get all the things. But I was so happy to hear that when they announced it last night about Austin Watson because he is a very, very intricate part of this hockey club.
Crispy, what sort of challenge do the New York Rangers present over the weekend tomorrow?
Probably speed. They're going to come out of speed. They get off to a rocky start, same as the Calgary Flames, and they want to prove that they're a good team, and they are a good team, and they're very skilled. They're similar, maybe not as rugged, not as aggressive as the Flames are. I like their aggressiveness, but they're skilled, and we have to be every bit as skilled as them. Last night in that game, when you watch it, the skilled players for the Calgary Flames, and Coach Lav mentioned this in his post-game interview, Coach Peters double-shifted his 2 top lines in the 3rd period and came away with the win. You're going to see the New York Rangers' very similar attitude.
Crispy, always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of that coffee this morning, and we'll reconvene next Friday.
Thanks, fellas. Always good talking to you. See you at the rink.
You got it. Terry Crisp, brought to you by the Highland Group. The coffee always tastes a little better in the morning when you come off a win. Just saying.
Yeah.
Because I know last night, personally, for my wins and losses, you know, I had the 49ers, and they didn't cover. So my coffee this morning just didn't taste as good.
I'm sure it didn't.
No. Didn't taste good after the World Series either.
Well, my coffee was all right.
Yeah?
Because I didn't learn until I got to the show that they had blew a 4-1 lead.
Not many people around the world did.
Yeah, because I went
4-1, it was over.
Yeah, I went to bed.
Stillman thought it was over after 2-0. Oh, and by the way, can I rip A.J. Hinch again? Because I just realized something. Because remember yesterday I was all mad about A.J. Hinch.
I feel like the horse is dead, but go for it.
He didn't use Gerrit Cole.
Right.
And I would have been all hands on deck because it was the final game of the season. He's an even bigger idiot because Gerrit Cole's not going to be re-signed. He's not going to be your problem next year. He's walking in free agency. I would have thrown him till his arm fell off.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
By the way, violation on me. I used we as in the Predators.
I think it's okay, though.
You pointed it out. I think I was in violation.
But if you're...
It's a bad job out of me.
If you're talking, though, hypothetically about the coaching staff's... Like, you were sort of referring to how the team views Austin Watson, right? Like, hey, we're not a big team. We don't play a heavy game. You know, this
I should have said the Preds are not a heavy team.
But
we would mean that I'm included.
Yeah, but I think you were okay. I don't think you were including yourself. I brought it to your attention, but I didn't mean to do it in a way that was negative. I think it was, I think you're good. I think you're clear in this situation. Derek has no thoughts.
I mean.
Dad jokes coming up in a little bit.
Oh, my God.
And I got a few for you.
A guy that's not even a dad came into the studio and gave us a dad joke.
Well, I'm going to give you some dad jokes.
He gave us two, and Derek just cackled like a hyena.
That was so funny.
Yeah, I'm going to give you dad jokes, and I'm not a dad, allegedly.
Yeah, D-Mace just laughed to impress management. That's always
funny. That was funny.
He's buttering up management.
That was funny.
That was a real laugh?
Was a real laugh. That was funny. Okay.
You're not fooling me.
That was truly funny.
I know what you're
talking about. Did he hold his chest while he was laughing? Because that's a fake laugh.
I never thought that guy would come in and give two dad jokes.
Really?
Yeah.
I was hoping he was coming in to check you into the boards, to be honest.
Yeah.
Why would he check me into the boards?
It's just, you know,
can we
it's
put
Friday.
Can we put some boards in
let's
here?
Let's get wild. Let's get crazy.
Let's
come on.
Let's put some boards in here.
I thought we were already wild and crazy.
We are.
We are three wild and crazy guys.
Stick to sports.
Who are crazier than us?
Very few. Very few. Back after this. It is Morning Drive. Good to have you in here on a Friday, 8:33. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise. Stick to Sports is coming up in about 15 minutes. Right now, we welcome in our pal Terry Crisp, Preds Television, Fox Sports Tennessee. Obviously, you see him with Lindsey Riley each and every broadcast, and he's brought to you by the Highland Group. Crispy, good morning. How's the coffee this morning, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. You must have the camera moving on me. It's tasting good, by the way. It was the first cup was a little sour because I was going over my notes from last night. Then I threw them away, got a second cup, and it's better, and I'm all set to talk civilized with you guys.
What do you do? Go back to put your coaching hat on and just, you know, when you see, you know the players are pissed off. You know they're upset about how they performed in the third period. Like, do you need to say anything? Do you need to go hellfire and brimstone? Do you just need to sort of say, hey, guys, you know what you did wrong? Like, how do you approach a situation like last night where you know everybody in that room knows what they did wrong?
Exactly. You know what? You just put your thumb right on the whole thing. What is it? No, the coach knows it. The players know. There's no sense beating a dead horse, and there's no sense going through it. The guys, believe it or not, they feel as bad as anybody. They were the guys out there in front of 17,000, 18,000 fans, in front of the TV people, in front of everybody, and they know exactly what happened, how it went down. So there's nothing that a coach can go in and explain or say to them or yell at them about that they don't already know and feel. So like what Coach Ladd said in his post-game talk, he says, nope, he said, I don't talk to him. He said, we'll talk tomorrow. We'll go over it tomorrow. And you know what? That's the best theory for a coach. I found out that I didn't want to talk to players either after a game. It's your best move. Especially sometimes you're heated, players are heated. You say things you can't take back or things happen. And Lav has the right idea. You know what? Today, they'll sit down, they'll go over it, they'll correct it, and they'll be ready for the next hockey game.
Crispy, I think so many people have been caught up this year in Matt Duchene and how well he has played, how well Pecorine has played, and almost forgotten about is Nick Bonino, who had another goal last night, and he is having a fantastic year. Are we not giving him the credit he deserves? Because he's off to a great start.
You know what? Nick Foligno is always one of those players that everybody says, if you're going to win a cup or you want to take a run at a cup, he's the type of player you have to have. But he never gets the headline glory, the headline talks that other players get. But he plays fourth line, third line, second line. You'll put him up to first line if we have injuries or if they need him to be. He kills penalties. The odd time you'll pop him on a power play. Late in the game, you need big face-offs won. You got Bonino and Sissons out there. This guy is by no means underrated by any of the coaches or anything. It's just that you're right. He doesn't get the accolades that big names get, but he certainly does the job.
Another guy that is on a tear right now is Jankro. He has 4 goals in 5 games. I mean, goodness gracious. I know Arvy stole one of his goals. He must have been really upset because after Arvy stole the goal, he went on a tear here. Just, I mean, explain to us what he's meant to the team thus far.
Well, if that's all it takes, then somebody else to steal another goal from him because he's playing like a big guy. You sit in the dressing room. Funny you said that because in the dressing room afterwards, the guys all give it to you when that happens. They say, come on, you knew it was yours, and they go on. But Jankroek, you know what? Coach Lav and the staff have said all along that Jankroek is, I just went through what Bonino means to this team. Jankroek is very similar. They can play him on left wing, right wing, center. He can kill penalties, do whatever. He pays the power play. You can play him on the third line or put him up to the first line, and you get a full effort from Jankroek in that one. And it just seems that he's hitting a stride. And I think now what he feels is his confidence in himself. And the coaches have relayed that to him with the ice time. The effort that he's given, they're giving him ice time for it. And that's well-deserved.
Crispy, some big news obviously going down during the middle of the game. Austin Watson's 3-year, $4.5 million contract extension. You know, a lot of times you watch Austin Watson, if you watch this team night in and night out, you know what he does. He gets dirty, he'll muck, he'll grind, he'll get in front, he'll be a net front presence. But it might not necessarily always show up on the stat sheet. What do you see from him and just how valuable is he? Because this is one of the smaller teams. This is not a massive team size-wise. We don't play a heavy brand of hockey. He provides, I think, really an invaluable skill set.
He does. And as a coach, I wish we had 2 more Austin Watsons. I really do. Because in the game now, in the playoffs now, you have to have some big horses. You have to have some guys that can run the whole gamut for you every series. And Austin Watson is one of them. But he's also proven that, you know what, he's taken his licks. He stood up to them. He's come back stronger than ever. And his teammates love him for the effort. And he's probably appreciated as much as anybody in that dressing room. As you just said, when the going gets tough and they know they have to have somebody to have their back out there when a scrum or a fight or whatever breaks out, Austin Watson is the first guy right now. He sticks his nose in, he intercepts it, whatever it takes to do it. And these guys are invaluable, and you're right. They don't get the limelight. They don't get all the things. But I was so happy to hear that when they announced it last night about Austin Watson because he is a very, very intricate part of this hockey club.
Crispy, what sort of challenge do the New York Rangers present over the weekend tomorrow?
Probably speed. They're going to come out of speed. They get off to a rocky start, same as the Calgary Flames, and they want to prove that they're a good team, and they are a good team, and they're very skilled. They're similar, maybe not as rugged, not as aggressive as the Flames are. I like their aggressiveness, but they're skilled, and we have to be every bit as skilled as them. Last night in that game, when you watch it, the skilled players for the Calgary Flames, and Coach Lab mentioned this in his post-game interview, Coach Peters double-shifted his 2 top lines in the 3rd period and came away with the win. You're going to see the New York Rangers, very similar attitude.
Crispy, always a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of that coffee this morning, and we'll reconvene next Friday.
Thanks, fellas.
You got it.
Talking to you. See you at the rink.
You got it. Terry Crisp, brought to you by the Highland Group. The coffee always tastes a little better in the morning when you come off a win. Just saying.
Yeah.
Because I know last night, personally, for my wins and losses, mm-hmm. you know, I had the 49ers, and they didn't cover. So my coffee this morning just didn't taste as good.
I'm sure it didn't.
No. Didn't taste good after the World Series either.
Well, my coffee was all right.
Yeah?
Because I didn't learn until I got to the show that they had blew a 4-1 lead.
Not many people around the world did.
Yeah, because I went
4-1, to bed. 4-1, it was over.
Yeah, I went to bed.
Stillman thought it was over after 2-0. Oh, and by the way, can I rip A.J. Hinch again? Because I just realized something. Because remember yesterday I was all mad about A.J. Hinch.
I feel like the horse is dead, but go for it.
He didn't use Gerrit Cole.
Right.
and I would have been all hands on deck because it was the final game of the season. He's an even bigger idiot because Garrett Cole's not going to be re-signed. He's not going to be your problem next year. He's walking in free agency. I would have thrown him till his arm fell off.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
By the way, violation on me. I used we as in the Predators.
I think it's okay, though.
You pointed it out. I think I was in violation.
But if you're...
It's a bad job out of me.
If you're talking, though, hypothetically about the coaching staff's... Like, you were sort of referring to how the team views Austin Watson, right? Like, hey, we're not a big team. Mm-hmm. We don't play a heavy game. You know, this
I should have said the Preds are not a heavy team.
But
we would mean that I'm included.
Yeah, but I think you were okay. I don't think you were including yourself. I brought it to your attention, but I didn't mean to do it in a way that was negative. I think it was. I think you're good. I think you're clear in this situation. Derek has no thoughts.
I mean,
dad jokes coming up in a little bit.
Oh my God!
And I got a few for you.
A guy that's not even a dad came into the studio and gave us a dad joke.
Well, I'm gonna give you some dad jokes.
He gave us two, and Derek just cackled like a hyena.
That was so funny.
Yeah, I'm going to give you dad jokes, and I'm not a dad, allegedly.
Yeah, teammates just laugh to impress management. That's always
funny. That was funny.
He's buttering up management.
That was
funny.
That was a real laugh?
Was a real laugh. That was funny. Okay.
You're not fooling me.
That was truly funny.
I know what you're
talking about. Did he hold his chest while he was laughing? Because that's not a fake laugh.
I never thought that guy would come in and give two dad jokes.
Really?
Yeah.
I was hoping he was coming in to check you into the boards, to be honest.
Yeah.
Why would he check me into the boards?
It's Friday.
Can we put some boards in here?
Let's get wild. Let's get crazy.
Let's
come on.
Let's put some boards in here.
I thought we were already wild and crazy.
We are.
We are three wild and crazy guys.
Stick to sports.
Who are crazier than us?
Very few. Very few. Back after this. It is Morning Drive. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, Little Whitney on this Friday. Yesterday was all scary Halloween songs. Although we didn't do Hack Radio yesterday. Like, we didn't say, what's your biggest nightmare?
Yeah, kudos to us.
We did not, pat on our back.
Yeah, we don't do that crap.
Frankly, we did not do a single,
what's your spookiest sports memory?
What's your favorite Halloween
Who's the scariest
mask?
Defender in the NFL right now? I think it's Aaron Donald.
What's your worst nightmare in sports?
Let's do a candy draft.
a candy draft.
I think we did say that.
No, we didn't do it, though.
Yeah,
we said we weren't going to do it.
Yeah, we said we weren't going to do it.
Should we do a field of 64 come this spring on something that we really like?
Hip-hop.
Or would that qualify as Hack Radio?
No. As long as we do it originally.
Yeah. Can we do,
no one else has done it.
I mean, we could do a music and then separate each bracket as each genre of music. So
interesting.
Rock, country, rap, and miscellaneous.
Jazz.
Miscellaneous.
Katy Perry, whatever.
Katy Perry.
There will
whatever
not be a pop
she
bracket.
Is, that, we'll
other.
Put that. Yeah, miscellaneous either.
All right, let's stick to sports.
The world is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
Basically.
And stick to sports. Now on Morning Drive.
And as always, Stick to Sports is brought to you by...
The good folks at Decorated Den Interior. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den. When you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces, request a complimentary appointment, which we know is free, online at decoratingdead.com.
Number one.
All right, speaking of music, now can you dictate a person on how this person is based on the music that they listen to?
What does dictate a person mean?
Well, just, you know, can you figure a person out by their genre of music or the music choices that they make?
Like judge them as a person? Put them in a box?
Yeah.
I don't think so at all.
Chains?
No, not really.
No, I think all different types of people listen to all different types of music. I don't think you should. I don't think you should do that. I think people do probably.
All right, so college coaches.
I was going to say. So what are you getting at here?
Yeah, college coaches.
I mean, except for those who listen to Kenny Chesney, he sucks.
So basically, Brent McMurphy of the Stadium, he did a article about every college coach in college football's favorite artist, and Kenny Chesney was the top go getter, the vote getter with 8. So 8 people in college football love some Kenny Chesney. Eric Church finished second with 6 votes. And Dave Matthews Band, don't know why, but they finished third with 5 votes.
See, what struck me is odd, I read that article. What struck me is odd about the Dave Matthews Band thing is it's just a generational thing. Like, I'm getting older, and coaches are getting older, and coaches now were my age. Like, you know, like P.J. Fleck is like our age. So these coaches that listen to Dave Matthews Band, they were like teenagers in the 90s. Which means they grew up on Dave Matthews Band the way I did. And that's like what I When I saw that, I was like, oh, God, we're all just getting older. It's all I saw.
Speaking of Dave Matthews Band, am I in the minority here? Mm-hmm. I respect what they've accomplished.
Do you have words?
But I just feel like it's a band meant for people that just want to blaze up and get high and listen to zoned out music. Am I stereotyping the wrong way here?
I think it's the entry, like they're the entry band into those bands. Like if you want to go into the jam band world,
yeah,
then you started probably with Dave Matthews and then you end up at Humphreys McGee. Like, or, you know, or some other, you know, Fish or Widespread Panic or something like that. But, like, from a jam band standpoint, Dave Matthews Band is not even close to the most jammy of all the jam bands.
Okay.
They're like the entry band into that genre, though. So you end up, like, you start on Dave Matthews and you end up on Fish. Like, that's what happens.
Like, I'm trying to think of the only Dave Matthews Band song that I ever really enjoyed. Was it Ants Marching?
Ants Marching is good. No, listen, I was a heavy Dave head or whatever you'd call him. I don't know. I loved Dave in high school, but I was a teenager, and I saw Dave Matthews on the Crash Tour in Austin, Texas. The first concert I ever saw was Dave Matthews Band and at the Frank Erwin Center in like 1996. So this was before I don't know when he got mainstream. He was also one of the most popular mainstream bands touring around the world.
Oh, I don't dispute the success.
Right. So I don't think you can be a hippie jam band and be popular, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that.
No, you're probably right. I'm just never, like, I don't know. They've never done anything for me. Like, I hear them and I'm like,
well, if you don't like Dave, it's fine. It's not that, like, I've sort of grown out of Dave. I don't listen to a lot of Dave in the last 10 or 12 years. Once he got clean, I stopped listening to his music.
By the way.
Is that weird?
Yeah. No.
Les Miles likes 21 Savage. Did not know that.
That was an odd one.
That's a very odd one.
Mike Loxley was Citizen Cope. I was like, Citizen Cope's really good. That's just a super random favorite artist of all time.
So to go through the SEC, Nick Saban, the Eagles, Chad Morris, George Strait, Gus Malzahn, the Cars. I can't imagine Gus Malzahn listening to
that's
the
a solid, Cars. But that's a solid role, though. Like, it's at least you could. What it, that's him being authentic, though, at least. I think Jeremy Pruitt just totally lied through his teeth.
All right, Dan Mullen with U2, Kirby Smart, Luke Bryan, which...
Oh, jeez.
At least it wasn't Jason Aldean, because Jason Aldean's a huge Georgia fan, so if it was Aldean, then you know he's selling out.
Yeah. Mark Stoops with Toby Keith.
Toby Keith. Oklahoma fan, shocking. Stoops' brother.
Ed Ogeron, CCR, of course.
I love that. That's good.
This will shock me. Joe Moorhead, Notorious B.I.G.
Moorhead is very hip-hop. He loves hip-hop.
Joe Moorhead and Biggie.
Yeah, you know, he's a Northeast guy. Like, he's from up there. He grew up on that, for sure.
Barry Odom, George Strait, Matt Luke, Jason Aldean, Will Muschamp, Darius Rucker.
That's selling out. Yeah. There's just no way the head coach of South Carolina's favorite musical act of all time is also the most famous musical fan of South Carolina. There's just no way that's real. You know what I mean? Like, Will Muschamp is clearly catering, right?
Mm. Did you guys know Mike Golick is good friends with Darius Rucker?
No, I didn't.
He likes to let you know that, like, you know, every six weeks.
Does anybody actually believe that Will Muschamp's total all-time favorite artist of all time is Darius Rucker?
Could he name five Darius Rucker or Hootie and the Blowfish songs off the top of his head?
I think he's lying through his teeth.
Because I can't. Time is the only one. And Wagon Wheel.
I
only want to be with you.
That's not even Hootie. Yeah. Hootie's got great ones. Even the Dolphins.
Joe Moorhead and Biggie. Imagine Joe Moorhead, right? He's rolling up for a recruit. He pulls into the house, and he's got Juicy just blaring out of the Escalade.
He's looking at his recruits. I love
it. Here comes this guy with glasses and a goatee.
Now, his love of hip-hop has been very, very well covered over the years up from the Northeast. Again, he's from the same area of the country as Biggie. But I'll say, again, Jeremy Pruitt picking Kenny Chesney. That's a complete and total sellout to Tennessee fans.
Mm.
Like, what is he, when he was the defensive coordinator at Alabama, was it Skinnerd? You know what I mean? Like, Kenny Chesney, who belongs at ETSU, not University of Tennessee, by the way. He never went to the University of Tennessee. He's an ETSU grad. Stop claiming Tennessee, Kenny Chesney. That's a total sellout job. I just don't like... We know Nick Saban loves the Eagles. Like, that's his favorite band. There's no way these guys are just... They happen to love the favorite artist of their school.
So what do we know about Saban? The Eagles, Little Debbie Rolling Cookies...
Stones. Maybe. I don't know. He looks like a Rolling Stones guy. Little Debbie's.
I mean, he does love 70s rock, but we know he loves his boat.
Did he eat the oatmeal cream pies when you played for him?
I didn't notice it.
No?
I didn't. Maybe he did.
Because he made it very clear on that ESPN thing, the rolling with the tide thing, that he only eats the little ones. Like, because the oatmeal cream pies will come in like a little, like maybe, I don't know, like a fist size, but then there's the bigger size.
Exactly.
He says the bigger one's too much.
It might be too much.
Too sweet for him.
Oh, it all depends on how many little Debbie's he eat during the day.
Dude, when I had the big one a couple times, like when you're a kid, you're like, oh my God, this thing is such a treat. The little one you can eat in like 3 bites. And it's gone like that.
Yeah, that's why you like them. I used to eat those. Those things are so good.
They're my only beef with Saban is that he's a oatmeal cream pie guy instead of a tasty cake guy.
Oh, I go oatmeal cream pie.
Really?
Tasty cakes.
Tasty cakes are from Philadelphia.
Are the best.
What's the peanut butter one with the wafers? What's that one called? The chocolate?
Peanut butter candy cake?
No. You know what I'm talking about, where like it's the two chocolate bars and it's got peanut butter and the wafer. That one and the oatmeal cream pie was my favorite. We also have audio of Nick Saban talking to Derek Mason when Derek Mason asked him about what his favorite food was when he was playing for him at Michigan State.
Oh, you, Mason. Just you.
Yeah, I don't know why. Nick, did he even have Debbie cakes or a little whatever?
Oh, they were around back then.
Oh, they've been around since the 60s.
No, I know, because my roommate and I, we used to buy those things, the little Debbie cakes. They used to be our dessert during our meals. We used to buy those things like they were going out of style.
Think about this. You had the opportunity to play in New England. You ultimately went to Baltimore. As we just heard in the audio, Belichick giving you the business. Mm-hmm. You actually could have played for arguably the two greatest football coaches in the history of sports.
Yeah, not many people could say that.
Saban and Belichick. You almost had that opportunity.
Yeah, played for one, could have played for the other.
The other one cussed you out.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's all respect. All right, so if I were to ask you guys the artists that would define you, that like we obviously Nick Saban likes the Eagles. Cool. So if there was that one artist that would be your artist, what would it be? Or who would
so
it
this
be?
Is not like favorite artist of all time? Or is this just like...
Mine would be Outkast.
The artist.
Yeah, you love Outkast.
Yeah, mine would easily be Outkast. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
I don't know, man.
Like someone that defines you versus your favorite, there might be a difference.
Does it have to be a musical artist or just an artist in general?
I think we're talking about music, dude.
Because I think Ed O'Neill, a.k.a. Al Bundy, is the artist that defines me. Because I live vicariously through him.
That's true, but we're talking about music.
I think it's, would it be, I don't know, maybe Al Green or Trey Songz?
It's hard not to be prisoner of the moment. Like what you love today is not what I loved 10 years ago. It's not what I loved in high school. You know what I mean? Like it's, you go through phases where you love.
Because for me, it would be
things.
A toss up between Outkast and Kendrick Lamar. So,
Outkast is a dating requirement for you, right? It's on your checklist.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Girls you date need to know who Outkast is.
If at least one song.
If I get all of Jack White's catalog, like if I get Raconteurs, White Stripes, you know, Dead Weather, if I get all of his music, then I'd probably go with Jack White just because I'd get all. Like, I'd get 5 bands out of the deal.
You going Jack over Sturgill?
Again, I'm trying not to be prisoner of the moment. Okay. Like, Sturgill is my favorite, probably, artist currently over the last 5 or 8 years. But I don't want to be, like, a total prisoner of the moment. So, I mean, Dave was my favorite in high school. But I also loved Nirvana a ton. Rage Against the Machine is one I still listen to today.
I'll go Bon Jovi.
I'll go Trey Songz. There we go.
Trey Songz. That's wow.
Number one artist, songs.
Just listen to the music. Just listen to the music, man.
I know the music.
Yeah.
The neighbors know my name. I know the music.
I did go through a widespread panic phase in college.
Listen to the music, man.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right, coming up, final hour. Morning Drive, Pigskin picks against the spread at 9:30. Big finish at 9:45. Up next, though, one-on-one last night, probably the shortest one-on-one in the history of the Constable Chase McCabe. He caught up with a guy that's getting no credit, no love, no respect, and should be, and you'll hear it next on Morning Drive.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.